Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Serena Thompson about sickle cell. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with sickle cell.
Well, my experience is a personal one. I live with sickle cell disease, and at a very young age, I was told that I was not going to survive past 20 or 21 years old. I am now 46, so that tells something about the healthcare system. How things have improved since then. I have been in and out of the hospital all my life. The kids basically was my second home in Toronto. And most of the time I would get a lot because as a child, you're running around playing, trying to be normal. And, but the extreme activities and stress can contribute to a sickle cell crisis that puts you in the hospital. It could be for a day, a couple of days, or a couple of weeks, even a couple of months. And then as a teenager, it still continued to affect me in a way that while I was in school and high school, with the stress of, exams and projects being due and stuff like that, I would have quite frequent crises, and that would affect my studies. I graduated a year later than all my colleagues because of being sick all the time, especially during exam time. And then going to college, I never got to complete college because of the stressors of being a young adult and also trying to complete college. So I only got halfway through my program. And so then it has affected me, emotionally, mentally, physically, in all those areas. Also, it affects my social determinant of health, so my relationship with, my employment, my schooling. I have a daughter who has the sickle cell trait. We made sure to double check the father and see if he had any abnormalities in his blood, and he came out okay, so we knew that our daughter was going to have at least the trait. And she's very well aware of what to look out for if she is entering relationships and so forth.
So do you know offhand about how many people are affected by this disease?
Right now, we have statistics out there from the UHN, Universal Hospital Network, around 5,000 people, 4,000 to 5,000 people are affected in, I'm not too sure if it's Toronto or if it's all of Ontario, but we have the statistics is about 5,000 people are affected.
So what's been the biggest support system that you've had when it comes to dealing with the condition?
My biggest support system is my family. Even though they don't know, 100% on how it affects me, or what it does to me internally, they understand that once I'm in the hospital, I need help. And then the Sickle Cell Association of Ontario, they've been big supporters as well, to the point where I ended up on their board. So I've been affiliated with the Sickle Cell Association of Ontario for 10 years now. And they provide a lot of resources, a lot of education through their conferences. And it's really the support of, the organization just being there as advocates. That's the biggest thing, that we need advocates. And then people in our family that just understand and support and be there for you.
So if you could send any message to the community about this condition, what would you say?
Well, I don't let this condition bring me down. I do not let this disease bring me down. And that's what we have to understand, that we are resilient. You are resilient. You are able to get through it day by day through pain management and awareness of your body and how you react to certain medication. And just take care of yourself anyways with diet and exercise and mental well-being. Try to get a social worker that you can talk to anytime you need help. So I say to just live day by day and with a force, knowing that you will overcome all the time. You'll overcome. You will survive this crisis. You will survive this setback. You have people in your corner to help you. So that's what I tell people anyways. That's what I tell people with sickle cell, to, live their best life as they can.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
The next segment of our show, we'll hear from Cynthia Ryan, who'll be telling us a little bit about VITA. So tell me a little bit about VITA. Segment of our show, we'll hear from Cynthia Ryan from VITA. So tell me a little bit about VITA.
The Vitiligo Disorders Association has been around for over 30 years, and we serve people with inner ear and brain balance disorders. When people hear vestibular, they're like, what? What is that? And I like to explain it like, think of that one time that you couldn't balance, that you got dizzy when you got off the roller coaster or the carnival ride. That's what it's like for people with vestibular disorders all the time. So the vestibular system is in the inner ear. It's very small, but also it works with the brain to keep us upright, to keep us balanced. And when the vestibular system isn't working, or the link from the vestibular system, the nerve from the vestibular system to the brain isn't working, people will experience dizziness, vertigo, that spinning sensation, imbalance, and a host of other secondary symptoms like chronic fatigue. When the brain is working so hard to keep you balanced, it doesn't have cognitive processing abilities. People They get brain fog. They can't think clearly. And all of this is invisible to others. So people who have vestibular disorders, you know, what other people see is someone walking around like they're drunk, maybe even slurring their speech, not being able to communicate very well because they can't think clearly. And vestibular patients are often accused of being drunk or just lazy by their friends and family, their employers, and even the medical system. Many doctors don't understand vestibular disorders, and so patients will end up in their doctor's offices dizzy and confused, and the doctors will give them medication to cover up the nausea that they're feeling and send them home and say, well, you know, your symptoms will probably resolve in a few days. And maybe, you know, they don't most of the time, or maybe they do because the symptoms are episodic. But the fact is that, you know, many patients go for years without getting an accurate diagnosis. And so what the Vestibular Disorders Association does is we help to educate patients about their condition so they can be better advocates for their own health care. Because if you understand a little bit about what's going on with you, you can ask better questions of your doctors, and you can help yourself navigate the medical system, which isn't always working for you.
So I'm wondering, do you know how many people about have vestibular disorders?
Well, there's a study in the United States that said that as many as 65% of the population will have some sort of vestibular dysfunction in their lifetime. That's or about 35%, rather. I'm sorry, that's 65 million people. And that's not necessarily a chronic vestibular disorder. It might be a one-time condition that does resolve. But I think the point there is that it's more common than you think, and that most people, one in three people, if you think of it that way, one in three people will have some sort of vestibular dysfunction. So if you look around, if you know three people, you're going to know somebody that this has happened to. And yet people don't know that this is what's going on for them. They don't associate it with a name, with vestibular. They don't associate it with something that there is, that there's something that you can do about it, that there are treatments for it. And so people struggle alone and they don't want to voice what's going on for them because others don't see what's going on for them. They're not going to be believed.
So in your time with the association, has there been any success that stands out for you?
Yeah, I would say that, in my time with VITA, I've been with VITA almost 9 years now, we have seen a huge increase in the number of people who are finding us and saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe that there are other people like me. I thought that I was alone. We have developed a program that we call our Vestibular Ambassador Board. And this is a group of volunteers who wants to help raise awareness about vestibular disorders in their local communities, online, through social media. And I think that this is really making a difference, because people, when I listen to vestibular patients who call us for help or on our through our support groups, on our social media pages, what I hear over and over again is that we're building a community of support that is global. We have people connecting via our online support groups and our Facebook pages all over the world who thought that they were alone because they didn't know anybody in their local community who, or they had not, they had not talked to somebody who shared that this is what they were going through. And now that they are getting a voice, they're learning that they can talk about this, that there are other people who understand what they're going through. They're gaining confidence to talk about it amongst their friends and family without embarrassment. And inevitably, I hear people report, you know, I shared this in my church group, for example, and someone else said, "Wow, I experienced that, and I didn't know what it was." And so these people are helping each other get connected with resources, get connected with information, scientifically validated information about vestibular disorders, and support networks, and also healthcare providers who specialize in these conditions, so that they can get accurately diagnosed and effectively treated more quickly.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
This is Joe and Cam, your favorite two male nursing students at the University of Windsor, hosting No Scrubs on CJAM FM 99.1.
Join me and Joe every Tuesday at 12 and Wednesday at 4:30, where we discuss today's hottest health topics related to student life. We do the research, so you don't have to.
Remember, you can listen live or online at www.cjam.ca. And while you're at it, feel free to give us a follow at CJAM No Scrubs on Facebook.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Cynthia Ryan about VITA and from Serena Thompson about sickle cell. This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Judy Meisner, who'll be telling us a little bit about psoriasis research. So tell me a little bit about psoriasis.
Well, psoriasis is a skin disease that's been around since the biblical times. Thousands of years it's been around. And in those thousands of years ago, when people had psoriasis, they didn't know what it was. They called it leprosy. And people were afraid of people because they said they had leprosy, so they would lock them away. And but it was really psoriasis.
So
that's how long it's been around.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the work that goes on in regards to this today?
Well, there's not a whole lot of research in Canada because there isn't the funds to do that. We wish there were. So all that people can do is get treatments from the doctor, and there's different types of psoriasis, and it depends on the doctor and as to the treatment, as to the type of psoriasis that you have.
So can you take me through some of the effects psoriasis might have on a person?
Well, it affects them at work, because at work a lot of people won't go near them. They stay away from them, because they're afraid they might catch it, and it has causes a lot of problems, especially when people know that you have psoriasis. People are afraid because they don't understand. They understand it more now than they did 36 years ago before I started the first organization in Canada. They understand more about it, but they're still having problems with people being afraid of it.
So that brings up the question, is it actually a contagious condition? Are
no,
there fears?
There's no way ever that psoriasis is contagious. It's inherited. It comes through the genes, through the family. If a mother has it, there's a chance that one of her children will have it. And we have families of six children, and only one has it. So it depends on who they pick, actually who they pick throughout. And it's inherited, so they don't know who's going to get the genes, and
so
that's something they don't know.
So these workers, in the scenario you mentioned, their fears would be just based on bias or misunderstanding, not
yes.
Any...
Yes, yes, and we when people call and tell us about that, we send them information and we ask them to sit down with the boss first to explain psoriasis is not contagious, to go over the information, and then the boss could call. Sometimes the boss calls an interview with all of the staff, and they talk about psoriasis. And then once that happens, the co-workers feel much better about it. And the same problem at school. We have the school programs we send information to because the children are afraid to touch the children in school. So we contact the teacher, we send information to the teacher, we talk about it in the class, and in one class, they let the five-year-old boy stand up and talk about psoriasis. And after he finished, the children were allowed to ask him questions, and the teacher said after that, all of the children were playing with this child, because they understood what it was. So it makes a difference. Makes a difference.
So, are there any success cases when you tear down a myth like that, that it's something to be afraid of, something to be shied away from? Is there any case where you were able to change someone's outlook?
Oh, yes. Yes, there's many times that we change the outlook. And especially by giving information and having them talk to their coworkers and talking to the school. That's very, very important, and that really, really works. So the more that that's carried out, the better it is.
So what are some of the challenges in debunking the myths concerning psoriasis?
Well, there's always people who are afraid of something they don't understand. Doesn't matter what disease it is, if they don't understand it, they're afraid of it. So, but especially with a lot of diseases, it's in the inside. But psoriasis on the outside, and where you can see it on your arms, legs, scalp, face, and that's when people become very concerned. But once the person that has it if it has a chance to talk about it, then the other person's not afraid anymore because they understand it. So it's very important to discuss what psoriasis is in any work condition, any work setting, or any school setting.
So,
it's very important to discuss psoriasis.
So, do you know offhand about how many people would be affected by it?
Well, according to years ago, the dermatologist would tell me that there's more than 1 million people in Canada that have psoriasis.
So,
the figure they gave us.
If you could send any message to the community about the need for greater understanding of this condition, what would you say?
Well, if you don't understand psoriasis and you want to contact the Psoriasis Society of Canada, we'd be pleased to speak with you on the telephone and go over psoriasis with you. Or you can ask your doctor. Your family doctor would even know that psoriasis is not contagious, so that you're not going to be too concerned about it. So there are ways of finding out more about psoriasis.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for your organization?
Well, we would certainly like to do many, many projects, but with no funding, it's very, very difficult to do projects. We would love to have a psoriasis fashion show. It's never been done in Canada before. That costs money. And also, we'd like to do a psoriasis conference in each province, which we did years ago. And we'd like to do that again. But all of it takes funding, which we're trying to obtain, to get some funding if we can, to carry out these programs.
And you would say to the public these programs are essential?
Yes, oh, it's very important to have these programs because people that have psoriasis, when they come to the meetings, they've never had a chance to go to a meeting before, and they're sitting there with everyone who has psoriasis, and they feel so much better about themselves. We form a circle, and everybody has something to say. And they are very, very pleased that they attended because they've never had that opportunity before, and they feel so much better about themselves when they leave.
That brings up an interesting point, that if a person is shied away from based on something like that, it can create a good deal of mental health strain on the person.
Yes, and it has. It has, because psoriasis causes a lot of stress. And actually, that's the problem, because if you're stressful, your psoriasis has a large percentage chance of getting worse. So, like, you can be clear, and you have a something happening in the family or work or whatever, and out comes your psoriasis full blown. But stress is something we can't avoid. It's with us every day. So try and calm down the best you can. That's all you can do. But it does make psoriasis work.
Well, that's true, but the thing is, there are degrees of stress. If a person's shied away from just because of something that isn't going to hurt them or isn't going to hurt anyone else, that's a stress that really shouldn't be there.
Yes, more people, more than ever, are speaking to other people about it, especially at work. People are afraid. They're talking more about psoriasis, and it's becoming more in the open now than it ever did. It's more in the open now than 36 years ago when I started. It was really bad then. Everyone was afraid.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. My friends, this was kind of an important topic to bring to the table because, well, beyond being a skin condition, it can lead to that sense of isolation, which creates mental health strain, and it snowballs from there. The worst thing we can do to anyone with any given condition is to isolate or to ostracize them in any way. For the fact is, we all have that something that makes us unique, one little factor that sets us apart from everyone. The truth of the matter is, none of us is in a position to cast judgment about anything of that nature. Oh, you have a skin condition, better stay away from you. I don't really know if it's contagious or not, but I better stay away, just because I don't want to find that out. Take some time. Get to know people. Learn the truth. Separate it from the myths. It's easy to believe everybody's story out there of what might have happened. The truth is, unless you live it for yourself, unless you spend time with said someone, or living with the condition yourself, you're not going to appreciate its full impact. You're not going to necessarily know exactly what it is. There's the cold analytical experience, which someone can say, this many people are affected with it. And then there's the human experience, where you can look and say, oh yeah, I know a guy with that, and he dealt with it by doing this, this, and this, and it's worked out pretty well for him. I mean, it's easy to just go by somebody else's lived experience. You want to do that? That's fine. There are statistics for everything. But you're denying yourself the chance to get to know the complete person. Who are they beyond a condition? So, they have something with their skin, makes them a little different. What else is there about them? Do they have a family? Do they have a job? Are they well educated? These are the things you don't learn if you only see one surface-level aspect of a person's life. But if you can look beyond it, you come to realize very quickly they're just as human as anyone else. It's true with any condition. And isn't it awfully presumptuous of us to say, I don't have a condition and I never will, so why should I know about it? I mean, disability has struck in every family, statistically, and it can strike anyone at any time. The more we keep an open mind, the better our preparedness will be for that day when it affects someone we care about, or even ourselves. An open heart and an open mind, I maintain, is the only way to live in true equality. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me, you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.